Are you living a life that feels good? Could it be better? Welcome to the Pursuit of You podcast. I'm Jocelyn Kate. What does it mean to be in the pursuit of you? Identifying and validating your own feelings, communicating them in healthy ways, and building a network of people who will love and respect you in all the ways you deserve so you can experience ultimate happiness through emotional connection. I wanted to talk today about emotional boundaries. And I think that it is, I did talk about in another episode, I think it was from the first season, about the different kinds of boundaries that we have. We have physical boundaries and emotional boundaries and intellectual boundaries. And these boundaries, they exist for different reasons. And the physical boundaries, for example, they exist for our safety. And most people will put physical boundaries into place for themselves, and they will determine what kind of behaviors are acceptable around them or what kind of interactions they'll participate in. And this is based on the physical boundaries they've discovered for themselves that make them feel safe and stable and grounded. And intellectual boundaries, for example, I'll give you a personal example, is I do not watch crime or murder-related true stories. And I know that's like a big podcast genre, but I get super, I'm an empath, and I over-empathize and I overthink. I also have complex post-traumatic stress disorder, so I catastrophize. So I have a whole swirling mess of situations that would really activate, you know, my emotional distress. And so I know that intellectually, I do not process, you know, missing person stories well. Intellectually, I do not process murder stories well. And so I have boundaries around the kind of content I'll consume, the kind of shows that I'll watch, you know, the kind of podcasts that I'll listen to. And I really try and keep the intellectual boundaries apparent within my relationships so that, you know, my loved ones and my care community are aware that this is an intellectual boundary for me. And also so that they won't, you know, come at me with a, you know, a new story that they find super exciting and share with me. Because like I said, I'm an overthinker. And when certain information is introduced to me, I tend to ruminate on it. And then I really, I get stuck in a loop of, you know, worrying and being upset. And then I start to neglect myself. And so I have these boundaries in place to avoid stepping into that pattern of self-neglect. And so in talking about these different kinds of boundaries, wanted to talk today about emotional boundaries and what exactly emotional boundaries are. And when we talk about needing to have emotional boundaries in place in our relationships and, you know, with our loved ones and in our care communities, what exactly does it mean to have and to respect emotional boundaries? And it's, you know, it's tough because I know triggered has become such a buzzword. And, you know, and trigger warnings have become such a buzzword. And, you know, we often take it upon ourselves to, or we've moved into this habit of taking it upon ourselves to manage the way that somebody else is integrating information into their lives. And, I'm not a fan of trigger warnings. I don't believe there is a way to avoid somebody's processing methods. And so I don't employ any tactics that are meant to do that. And so trigger warnings, in my opinion, are simply a way to avoid somebody else's personal integration. And I think through my belief of radical responsibility, we each individually process the information that comes in. So having said that, in talking about emotional boundaries, emotional boundaries are not about avoiding people's triggers. And I know that something in my own family, an experience that I struggled a lot with was a family member would say, don't talk about that, it triggers me, or don't mention that person, it triggers me. And I felt trapped in this sort of pattern of walking on eggshells and not knowing when I was allowed to address something or when I was allowed to talk about something. And so when we talk about emotional boundaries, it's not about not upsetting people, and it's not about not getting upset yourself. Emotional boundaries are about healthy processing, just with every other kind of boundary, with the intellectual boundaries that I have. That's not because true crime podcasts and TV shows are bad. It's just because I know my own processing limits, and so I set the limits to keep myself stabilized and peaceful. And that's my individual responsibility. And if it happens that something outside of me activates those emotions, it is my responsibility to manage that situation. And, you know, of course, that doesn't mean that I do not make choices about what I'll expose myself to. If a person is continually exposing me to stories that are upsetting to me, you know, I'll set a boundary with interacting with that person. I don't set a boundary around that person's behavior. They are free to share their stories, but maybe I'll limit my interactions with them. So if emotional boundaries are not avoiding upset, then what are they? They are the space in which your feelings and emotions are helpful to you. When you have feelings, they're signals, they're messages. And I think I'll go into that in another episode, because that is such an important topic. It is so important to understand that feelings are messages. They're not intruders. And oftentimes, if we don't have methods of processing certain emotional turmoil, if we've experienced abuse or neglect, or if we're experiencing a new situation for the first time, we simply haven't processed it yet, then we may not have any methods to process it. And that's okay. That's okay that we're new to things and that we're learners and beginners in different areas of our lives. We will continue to be beginners until we are no longer. So it's okay. But when you are needing your feelings and emotions to be helpful to you, it's important to evaluate how sharing them helps you get your needs met. Emotional boundaries are the space in which your feelings and emotions help you get your needs met. So sometimes we have feelings and emotions and we express them and our need does not get met. And that can be so difficult to work through, because once we have identified the problem within us and the solution that we think will address it, what we want is our care community to cooperate with us so that we can access the solution or the relief or whatever it is. But if our emotions are spilling outside of our emotional boundary space, they'll become toxic to other people. And I talked about consent to care in another episode. And when our emotions and our feelings spill out of our emotional boundary space, what we tend to do is obligate other people to care. And, you know, when somebody obligates you to care, it is a very draining and disorienting feeling, because, you know, we all want to believe that we're good people who make good decisions. But when we are obligated to care, it's an instinctive reaction that our permission muscles want to flex. And we want to justify the way that we prioritize, and we want to justify the way that we respond to things. When somebody obligates you to care, it feels like your consent has been taken away from you. And the problem there becomes not about what their feeling or need is, but about the consent. And, you know, I think so many of us get caught in these struggles and these arguments about whether our feelings matter or whether our needs matter, because we'll express our feelings and our needs to a partner or to a member of our care community, and it'll end up in a fight. It'll end up in a debate. It'll end up in feelings of rejection. And this often has nothing to do with the core feeling and need, but has to do instead with the consent and with the way the feeling and the need was presented, and if permission was asked from the other party to participate and cooperate in caring and resolving. We tell ourselves these stories that I am going to be safe from turmoil, from resistance, from rejection, whatever human experiences exist that are unpleasant. And, you know, we like to construct relationships and tell ourselves that they will make us safe. And because we are so often obligated to care for other people, we adopt this conditioning as normal. And because we have been obligated to care about somebody else, we feel the entitlement to tell someone that they're obligated to care about us. And so we try and convince instead of, you know, expressing and asking, we'll often resort to you should. And that's not allowing consent. That's not allowing the consent to cooperate. And people really like to give their permission when it comes to acts of service and cooperating with other humans and being in care communities. We want to be able to consent to what we're doing. And if we don't feel like we're consenting, there will be resistance. And sometimes we question ourselves. We say, oh my gosh, there's resistance. I'm a bad person. No, there's resistance because your consent wasn't explicitly asked. And when your consent is not explicitly asked, your body sends you signals and sensations to let you know. And it feels like guilt and it feels like shame, but it's a message. It's not an intruder. It's letting you know that you need to be able to give permission. And, you know, when other people obligate us to care, and this is something I know that the victim mindset really draws out empathy without consent. And it's a difficult mindset to communicate with, the victim mindset, because when somebody is perceiving themselves as a victim, we tend to want to help them come out of it so that they can feel strong. And you know, when somebody is in a victim mindset, they are withdrawing empathy. But beyond that, to extensively carry a victim mindset, to perpetually see life as a burden, or to perpetually see yourself as a victim to circumstances or things beyond your control, that is really a non-consensual extraction of empathy. And when people operate in a victim mindset, they are non-consensually extracting empathy from other people. And when people extract empathy from us without our consent, we're left feeling drained and emotionally disoriented because the guilt and the shame come in. And we think, oh my gosh, am I broken? I don't feel bad for this person. Am I a monster? No. No, you are an autonomous being. And consent is vital to your inner peace. Consent is vital to your inner peace. And that it is a grain of sand, consent, but it is vital. And, you know, when we obligate our partners to care about the clean house, when our mother obligates us to care about her snowy driveway, that is non-consensual extraction of empathy. And when we do things without consent, they feel bad. And it can be hard to think of ourselves coming from this position. It can be hard to think of yourself having to express a need and ask for somebody to care and wait for them to answer, give them permission to say no, because it could be a no. It can be hard to do that. But the more you do it, the more in practice you get, and then the better you get at it, the stronger you get at deciphering who is a good care community member, what brings you emotional peace and safety. And when we think about that we would like to give our own consent, then we can recognize the need other people have to give their consent. And if you have ever had your empathy or sympathy extracted without consent, you know that guilt and shame that follow. And it is emotionally disorienting. Like I said, it is a difficult position to navigate because people, especially people of a victim mindset, like to obligate us into caring. And they like to make their case as to why we should care or why we're bad if we don't, why we're subject to their judgment if we don't do what they want. And that experience is incredibly draining. It is a denial of our own needs and a self-abandonment to allow somebody to extract empathy or sympathy without having first gotten consent. And, you know, we tend to feel animosity. And I think there are, you know, so many people who care for family members, parents, friends, or who stay in relationships because they feel that they will be judged harshly for saying no. When you feel shame or guilt, when you feel resentment towards a relationship, that is an indication that you are being pulled into participation without your full consent. And that's an indication that you are being obligated to prioritize what somebody else wants prioritized. And that's really an act of self-abandonment. When we allow other people to restructure our priorities, we're really suppressing that inner voice. We're really suppressing our own inner needs. And the reason that consenting to care is so important is because that's how we maintain that emotional boundary. That's how we maintain the emotional safety within a relationship. And relationships start to become emotionally unsafe when we don't feel free to express our thoughts, our opinions, or needs, or feelings. If somebody else doesn't have the intellectual capacity to soothe and cope with whatever feelings arise as a response to your thoughts and opinions, then they will likely blame you for having thoughts and feelings and opinions. The reality is there's nothing wrong with your feelings. And our feelings are, as a matter of fact, our amygdala is the first fully formed part of our brain. And so our empathy is fully formed from birth. It is the first thing that we are completely and fully grown in is our empathy. And that's because it's a survival technique to be able to mirror and react and read other people and even animals. It's really a survival technique that we are able to empathize. And, you know, that's how mothers are able to care for their babies. And that's how babies are able to decipher if somebody is dangerous or not, is that we are able to use the amygdala and we're using the empathy to determine if something is a safe situation or not. So having said that, there is nothing wrong with your feelings. They are the most matured aspect of your being, how your body processes sensations. That is literally the most matured piece of human. And so when you have feelings in your body, they're always right. And, you know, and our intellect and our ego and our lizard brain can create confusion. And as somebody who suffers from CPTSD, I can tell you, I know that my stories are not always right. When my body gets into a state of fear, when I feel adrenaline in my body, it's important that I recognize what I feel and that I'm able to identify the story. Because if I don't identify the story, I will use the adrenaline to help me direct my behaviors. And so I want to be clear about when your feelings are always right. Your feelings are always right. Like that my body feels adrenaline and that I identify it, that is right. That is very clearly what's happening. It doesn't mean the story attached to my feeling, the emotion is right. And feelings and emotions are two different things. Feelings are the sensations that arise in your body, and emotions are the intellectual processing and the story that gets attached to those sensations. When your body experiences sensations, it always knows. If you're hungry and your tummy grumbles, you know, and that feeling is always right. what's not always right is whatever story comes along with that. So maybe your tummy grumbles and you say, oh, it's only grumbling because, you know, I'm on a diet, right? It's just grumbling because I'm on a diet. And that's like, you know, it's a story we tell ourselves and we suppress the need. We don't work with it well. Maybe we are trying to get healthier, but ignoring the body sensations is definitely not the way. That is a self-rejection. It's a self-abandonment. But our feelings, the feelings are always, always, always right. And that you identify them is always right. The emotions and the intellectual processing that comes along with the feelings and the stories, that's where we need to do our maturity work, is because the storytelling and the intellectual boundaries, there's no guardrails in our mind. And so, of course, our stories can go anywhere. I can feel adrenaline and I can tell myself, oh, it's because something bad has happened and I just don't know it yet. And I can tell myself that story and I can believe that story. It doesn't mean that story is right, but that I have adrenaline is, I do have adrenaline, and that is true. So when we're talking about if you have feelings, if you feel angry at your spouse, if you feel insecure, if you feel scared, your feelings are right. And if somebody is causing you to debate them or argue them, it's because they're violating your boundary space. We do not need to debate our feelings with anybody. We can express them because we all have the autonomy to identify that we're feeling something. And then the other person can consent to care or not. And when we are working within our boundary space, we identify our feelings, express them in healthy ways, ask for consent to care, and work with people who have the capacity to intellectually process whatever feeling we had. So for example, I have moments of panic and, you know, storytelling where I think something bad could happen or something bad will happen. I'll ask my husband to call me every hour that day or text me at every work stop he has because I'm, you know, I'm afraid and I'm scared and I have adrenaline in my body. And, you know, that is a big ask. That's a big ask to ask my husband to you know, reorient his whole day and cater to my panic. It's a big ask. And in order for our communication to move along smoothly, it is important that we both have the intellectual capacity to process that conversation. So I, you know, identify my adrenaline. I'm freaking out. I want my husband to call me every hour. So I ask him, can you call me every hour? And maybe he says no. Maybe he says, I think that's unreasonable. I don't want to do that. I know you're scared, but I don't want to do that. That's not how I want to support you. It's important that he doesn't get angry at me because I've asked for it. It's also important that I don't get angry at him for denying me. Because we are autonomous beings and we both have the choice. We have the choice to identify our problem, identify our solution, ask for help. But I also have the choice to recognize that that solution may not be the best one. And it is so important for us both to be working towards that intellectual capacity, because if I ask my husband for something unreasonable, that is coming from a place of trying to get my needs met. I am not trying to be a villain. I am not trying to disrupt his life. I simply believe I found a solution to my problem and I want someone to work with me on it. If he got angry at me and said, that's effing crazy, I'm not going to do that, you're nuts. If he treated me that way, I would feel rejected. My feelings of concern and fear would feel completely rejected. I would think he doesn't care that I feel fear in my body. He doesn't care that I am uncomfortable in my body right now. He doesn't care. He doesn't want to help me. And in that mindset, you know, he judges me for what I said I need. And then in that mindset, I feel rejected. And so then I judge him back. He's mean. He's bad. He's uncaring. And now we've created this glass wall between us. We're not empathizing with each other. We're not sympathizing with each other. And we're not attempting to navigate a healthy solution. I may not be right in asking for what I need, But I do need my husband to have the intellectual capacity to listen to what I've asked for, to consider empathizing with me, and then respectfully and compassionately respond. Emotional boundaries are what allow us to find that fine line. And when we operate within our emotional boundaries, we strengthen the practice of really tuning into our inner voice and giving other people permission to tune into theirs. And when we do that, we can see them as individuals. We can see ourselves as individuals and really turn the temperature down on what we expect out of a relationship with another person. And I think that was a really big lesson for my husband and I, toning down the expectations of what somebody else can provide for you in regards to emotional safety. Something that I say very, very often is that validation can never come from outside of you. And on the other end of that, forgiveness can never be felt outside of you either. Emotional safety is always, always a personal journey. And how we structure our care communities is obviously going to influence the way that we access emotional safety. But the feeling of being emotionally safe in life is a personal and internal work. And that personal internal work is done when we strengthen our emotional boundaries. Once we strengthen our emotional boundaries, the fence around our inner voice, our self-trust, our inner relationship is stronger. And when we strengthen our emotional boundaries, we seek out people who do the same. We seek out people who operate in the same framework, where they speak on their feelings, they communicate, they ask. Operating within our emotional boundaries means that we always feel our feelings alone first. And that can be scary. It can be scary to be alone. But it's so important to remember that we all are ourselves alone. So be yourself alone. Let them be themselves alone and strengthen that boundary space. So I invite you this week. I know that this is a challenging concept. So I invite you this week to journal on the idea that we always feel our feelings alone first. And then we can request consent to care. So I hope that was helpful for you. Thank you so much for joining me today. I will leave a link to the episode on consent to care in the show notes here, because it's such a big deal to allow somebody else to consent to care. And especially when we're talking about our emotional boundary space, we want to consent to leave our emotional boundary space. We want to consent to allow other people into our emotional boundary space. And that's really about, you know, communication and curiosity and respect. And so I invite you to consider what it means to feel your feelings alone, to give consent to care about somebody else's problem, and really pay attention this week to how other people are non-consensually extracting empathy from you. And I would love it if you'd send me a message or send me an email. Let me know how you notice that. Because every time I talk about this concept with people, there is such a breakthrough. So many breakthroughs of people like, oh my gosh, that's why I always felt drained. Oh my gosh, that's why I always feel bad around that person. That's why I don't like how I feel when I see their name on my caller ID. Yes, yes. Because consent is a grain of sand, but it is vitally important to our emotional safety. So send me an email at hello@themiddaylatte.com and let me know if you have experienced non-consensual extraction of empathy. I would love to hear your story. Have an amazing week. Sending you love and light.